The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern-day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So, Dan, Manchester United fans that came away from Turin thinking, do you know what, maybe we're onto something here.
Good,
I mean, thanks. It wasn't perfect, but there was a bit of character there. Maybe we're going to be okay. And then Manchester City cruelly slapped it down for the lump it up to Fellaini nonsense that it was.
Anyone who came away with huge optimism from Turin, they need to realise that their loyalties are blinding their sense of logic.
Isn't delusion the whole nature of...
Well, that's the nature of sport. That's the beauty of sport, is that everyone's irrational.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone believes, you know, as a game gets closer, everyone believes. Generally, people, like, I think the sport fan, I'm not sure about players, but like sporting fans, they tend to get more optimistic as the game draws closer. It's a bit like, think of Ireland going to major tournaments, dreadful group, but then as it gets closer, it's like, well, actually, if we do this, if we do that, there's always a chance. You're never beaten before it starts.
No, it's true. So we'll hear from Seamus Coleman later on in the football show. He was speaking with Nathan Murphy at Stamford Bridge yesterday. Nil all draw there. Nathan did the commentary and chatted with Seamus Coleman. And we'll also talk to Kevin Coban, who has spent much of his Monday afternoon sitting on the couch re-watching the Manchester Derby. That was what he wanted to do. Before we get to all that, I've entitled this section, "We've sat through Martin O'Neill's press conference, so you don't have to."
Right.
Okay.
So is there a jingle to go with that, or is that just this? You just need to work on the jingle.
Work on a jingle. So a few different bits of bobs. I don't think there's anything too major going on. I suppose Michael Obafemi is the interesting news story out of the press conference, if there is one. So Obafemi, born in Dublin to Nigerian parents, made his debut for Southampton last year.
Yeah, I think this one is actually interesting because it's an unusual case. Yeah.
And he has pace. You know, I mean, we could do with as many strikers as possible for one, and strikers with pace are doubly good. And look, we don't have many 18-year-olds who've made a debut in the Premier League. So
ticks all those boxes.
Yeah, Obafemi was named in the provisional squad a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, oh, interesting, because there was talk of Nigeria certainly showing interest in him. And then I presumed, look, he's in the provisional squad, so we've got him.
Mm.
That may now not be the case that emerged today, or where are we?
Well,
I'll play O'Neill in a second.
Yeah, actually, the context of this is more so last week. Like, he was called into the squad, and actually last Tuesday, I think, when the squad announcement was, naturally a couple of us would have asked Martin O'Neill about both Obafemi and this guy Jimmy Dunn, who's a guy from Dundalk, who was named in the provisional squad last week, but Northern Ireland have been courting him.
Okay.
And the context of mentioning Dunn is that we asked O'Neill last week, well, are you calling up these lads because of the interest from other countries? And O'Neill basically said, well, yeah, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I've spoken to Tom Moen, who's the Ireland under-19 manager, and actually we're not worried about Obafemi. But he admitted the Dunn one, Dunn had spoken with Michael O'Neill. So he'd spoken with the international manager relevant to his other option. But where we got a bit of doubt with Obafemi was Mark Hughes on Friday, suggesting that Obafemi's situation may not be clear-cut. As you mentioned, Dublin-born, moved to England as a kid. So in theory, could play for Ireland, could play for Nigeria, because he's Nigerian parents, and he could play for England. And all three have been sort of, you know, around him at various points, but he's been playing with Ireland underage through the age groups.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here is Martin O'Neill then asked about Obafemi and if there is still that chance that he could still switch allegiances despite being with the Irish camp this week.
He's in the squad at this minute. He has obviously his decisions to make for his future. You would expect that anyway. And I think that's something that he would obviously discuss with his family. And so there'll be no real pressure on him to make that decision in the next couple of days.
So does that mean you won't feel comfortable putting him into the team against Denmark unless he's obviously made that decision?
Absolutely. Totally. That will be the player and the family's decision to do that. And that's the last thing that you'd want to do, is be rushing someone into a situation like that there if they are uncomfortable with it. I don't know if that's the case, because I will speak to him this afternoon. But if he has decisions to make, then I would respect that.
So there is a chance that he may still play against Denmark on Monday?
I don't think I could rule that out, certainly, but I would certainly have to have a discussion with him, and I think members of his family as well too.
So we'll see how that unfolds. We're getting to a point pretty soon with O'Neill press conferences where we're just going to have to say, right, let's get all the eligibility questions
out
of the way.
Yeah, let's get through that, you know.
And then we'll get on to the other stuff.
Who's here? Who's here? There should be like a fix with labels, you know, like sort of like an old traffic light ball or something, you know. It's like, who's go for green here? Or who are we not sure? Who's on yellow? Like, it is...
Spoken to Declan Rice's dad today, or
where is Annie? How the family getting on?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing how much time we're spending talking about this, but it's the rules of the game.
Sure is. If there's one thing we do have, Dan, it's right backs. If there's one thing,
right back. We've always had right backs.
No, listen, we like a good full back in this country. So at the moment, there's obviously Coleman and Matt Doherty of late, and Cyrus Christie as well. O'Neill asked if maybe he could try and find a formation or some way to shoehorn his three Premier League right backs into the team.
Well, Seamus is the captain, but that wouldn't be the reason he's playing. Seamus is playing because he's absolutely top-class player. And he's now recovered, I think, fully from the... not only from the serious injury against Wales, but obviously the stress fracture that he received, or certainly a couple of weeks ago, that prevented him from playing. So, really fine player, depending on what sort of system we play. It is possible to get all three into the side, you know, but that's something I'll obviously consider over the next few days. But Seamus Coleman, let's be fair about it, would be first choice.
I think we all agree on that, but I mean, you could have Coleman. It depends on formation, of course. Like, there's even potential for Coleman as one of three centre backs if you really wanted to. But you could have Coleman somewhere right back. You could have Matt Doherty on the wing, and increasingly, you could have Cyrus Christie in centre midfield.
I mean, you can't have Cyrus in centre midfield. It's been done.
He can do what he wants to.
But we've got Robbie Brady back now, and other players available. But Clem Whelan's farewell on Thursday, of course, as well.
Yeah, we should talk about that later on.
I don't think you need to get Cyrus onto the pitch in central midfield. It's just personal preference. But, I mean, one of them at left back would be another option as well.
One last one that was touched on today, and then we'll talk to Kev about the derby. It's 25 years since the World Cup game, the qualification game in Windsor Park. Lots of pieces during the rounds over the last few days, Alan McLaughlin's goal and all that. So, tensions were certainly heightened back then, to say the least. O'Neill was asked with this current friendly against the North if he has to warn his players about their behaviour in any way, given the nature of the game this week.
Hopefully not. No, we actually played Michael's side a couple of years ago behind closed doors, just a little game, and the build-up to the Euros, I think it was. And that went off pretty well, but as I said, it was behind closed doors, and be a totally different atmosphere. But I think the players will be on their best behaviour.
Yeah, I've no doubt they will. I mean, you would think a matchup in Belfast is the next step.
That's the major step. That was when I was up at Belfast for the under-21 joint bid between the countries. That was one of the questions that the locals there were asking. That is the next step. Could the Republic come to Belfast for a friendly? Because you actually look at the history of the games between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, and the only friendlies that have been played, inverted commas friendlies, have been a game for the OMA Fund in 1999. Mm-hmm. Very small attendance is that, if I recall, but it was a charity case. And then we had the Carling Nations Cup 2011, which was part of a tournament. So it wasn't quite a standalone event. So this is actually like first time they've really played in a friendly match at range for no other reason than just, let's play a game against each other. So the next step is going to Belfast.
We had Louise Quinn doing the pay-per-view yesterday. If you didn't catch it, then a short version was...
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, the Republic played up in Newry, we found out afterwards. She wasn't actually quite sure at the time.
I wasn't aware of this at all, I have to say.
No, yeah. I actually think this may have been a bigger story if
it happened at the time.
Yeah, so this is only a year ago. So they were playing against the North. It was not a friendly, as I understand it.
No, they were in the same World Cup qualifying group.
And it turned out that no anthems were played at the venue because staff at the ground received death threats, as in, if the Irish Republic, if Aaron Levine anthem plays out in this stadium, death threat. And the decision was taken for safety not to play the anthem, and there was no anthem played. They didn't play anthems for either side. So that was last year, when you might have thought we were a bit beyond that. So if that went on, then I'm sure the two associations are well aware of what happened, and
I don't want to speculate about anything around this week, but I guess I think, locally here, a home game on a Thursday night, against Northern Ireland is not a massive thing, but it's always the issue of the away support. And like, there's a couple of thousand Northern Irish fans down, they're going to make a day of it. Mm-hmm. And it's generally more boisterous, the travelling support, in any international game, really. And you just hope that there's no instances, because obviously James McLean is going to be involved at the game, and he's a figure who would polarise opinions, or not even polarise opinions amongst the Northern Irish support, maybe unify his opinions amongst the support. So I guess there's a danger he becomes a centre of taunting, and that probably will happen. But I mean, we're sort of expecting that in a way, but hopefully that's as far as anything goes.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk to Kevin Kilbane next. Same old story for Manchester United fans.
What type of midfield is Herrera? He's not a box-to-box, he's not defensive, he can't do a f***ing killer pass. Why is he on the f***ing pitch? What for what? See him come here and f***ing boss us at Old Trafford. This is Man United talking. See him come here and f***ing boss us. Rojo, what is he? What was his tactics? As soon as you get Rojo, just f***ing do it. We're not f***ing Stoke. We're Man f***ing United here. Watch. That was diabolical, that. Martial is playing against a f***ing centre midfielder in doubt. Take the f***ing on. Take him on and f***ing do it. We're Man f***ing United here. That was diabolical, that.
Welcome back, Kevin Kilbane. Hello.
Hi, Joe.
Oh, hello. Are you not on Skype, no?
I am on Skype, yeah.
Oh, there you are. Oh, sorry, it sounded like a phone. Oh, there you are. Kevin Kilbane. Looking glorious.
Honestly, God.
He's in the Big Brother diary room there, to be fair. He's in the Big Brother diary room.
You're really looking down on us there. You're really over from a height. It's doing nothing for your chin.
Joe, you're always in my shadow, honestly. You know that. Honestly.
Doing nothing for your chin, though, Kev. That angle. Horrific.
Oh, is it? No, it's grand. It's grand, isn't it?
I'm just kidding. You look great. The hair looks fantastic.
So, we've not gone back there on that.
No,
one.
We're not.
Sure, we're not talking about her stuff.
We're most definitely not. So, look, we were talking briefly earlier on. It's always a thrill, Dan, when your phone goes and Kevin Kilbane shows up calling, you know?
Is it?
Yeah. Of course it is. And Kev said he was going to spend a lot of the afternoon watching the Manchester Derby back. So, the big takeaway from everyone here is it just completely reinstated the sense that there was a massive, 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 massive gap between these two sides. What did you make of it, Kev?
Yeah, you probably knew that after about 10 minutes of the game as well, again, didn't you, watching it back? It's a total contrast in styles. Prior to the game, I was even thinking about like what Jose Mourinho would say post-match, and you kind of knew, win, lose, or draw, what he would say, because you knew there was only one way Jose Mourinho was going to get a result against City, and it would have been something very similar to the way that they played against Juve, getting a result, which was quite lucky. We can't get by that fact. Mm. It was about a bit of a smash and grab, sitting deep, try to get a result. And they just didn't seem to me, even watching it early on, and even you with the naked eye, when I was talking to you today, Joe, looking at times, saying some players at times are pressing one or two were sitting off, because there was an obvious game plan that you could see it at times. You could see Rashford at times, because he was playing central, looking over his shoulder going, come on, we can go and press now. But the instructions clearly from the sideline was, no, we need to be back filtered into shape here, so we're not going to be played through. And that's what I noticed it two or three times, particularly through the first half and even the first 25 minutes of the game today, that United didn't necessarily have a way or a plan to go and hurt City. Rather, that it was more prevent, stop them, and then we will try to get something off the back of that. And even when they had the ball, Joe, when they won the ball back, when City give it away, was there a real purpose to the play? Was there a quick counter-attack? Was there a quick way to go and hurt City? And I didn't see it. I didn't see any sort of game plan to United that was seriously going to go and hurt City.
And what about City then?
I mean, I don't know what you can say about them at the moment. We said it last season, Joe, when you and I were talking, and even with Dan at times as well. It's the best football that I think we've ever seen from a Premier League side, without a doubt. I've never seen a side playing to that level consistently across 90 minutes as City are playing now. And that was start to finish again this game. Look at them against Shakhtar on Wednesday evening, was it? Look at them last weekend. Look at them against Shakhtar prior to that. Every single weekend they're playing, they're going out destroying sides. Now, and they were destroying Man United at the weekend. It could have been a lot more. And they're playing against top-class players. We know that United are top-class players. They're well-organised. They're a well-coached team, regardless of what you'd say about Mourinho. They're a well-coached side to stop teams scoring against them. But because they're playing against sides every week that's going to stop them playing, they find ways to open them up, and that's what is the beauty of this Pep Guardiola side.
You mentioned there you could tell in the first few minutes what kind of game it was going to be. When City took the lead, Manchester United had attempted 12 passes. 12 in those 12
minutes. Is that what it was? You know, it's incredible, isn't it?
And only five of them had been to a Manchester United player of the 12.
Yeah.
At that stage, City had made 104 passes before that first goal.
Says it all. It does. It says it all. But you know what, Joe? I think even if you're going to play that way, I mean, the blueprint probably to beat City, if City are going to go and dominate possession, is what Liverpool did to them last season.
Yeah.
How can you counteract it? How can you win the ball back quickly? Liverpool beat them last season at Anfield in the 4-3 game. I think they had around about 35% possession in that game. I think across the course of the two Champions League games, it was 35, 40% possession or whatever it would be. I may be correct on that, but it was definitely City dominating the ball anyway. What were Liverpool doing when they win the ball back? It was quick forward running, forward movement off the ball, but also quick forward passing. What United were doing at the weekend when they win the ball back, it was keeping the ball for keeping's sake. So it was a backward pass, a sideways pass, rather than saying, we've got a forward run, we're going to have someone that's going to hurt you off your shoulder. And that plays into City's hands, because City then are able to then start to maybe even get themselves back in shape themselves and then instigate another press. And United couldn't get through that.
Mm. Could Pogba have made any difference at all, Kev?
It's a good point, Dan. He is United's best player. He probably has been over the course of this season in general. He's had his off days, don't get me wrong. But I can't see how any player that's within United's squad, within the 25 or whatever it would be, is going to come into that side and make a difference. Was Lukaku going to make a difference up front instead of Rashford? Was Alexis Sanchez going to make a difference? Certainly not in my mind. And I don't know how Paul Pogba could have made a difference to United without the ball, because that was the game plan, Dan. If United without the ball, and that isn't necessarily Pogba's game as it is. So, no, I don't see Pogba making a difference to that United side at the weekend.
There was an interesting exchange in the Sky Sports studio afterwards where Souness was basically saying, like, is Mourinho getting the best out of the players? You know, maybe it boils down to that question. And, I mean, it was clear by the way he was asking the question, he doesn't think so. And
yeah.
Gary Neville was there and he was like, Gary, come on. You know, he was almost like, Gary, be honest, kind of a tone. Like, do you think he's getting the best out of those players? And Neville sort of said, well, you know, look, I mean, he said, my view at the moment in time, Manchester United don't look like they can win a game proactively, which is ties in what you're saying, you know, it's sit back and soak things up. He said, I'm not defending Jose Mourinho, but if you're asking me the question, could another manager get more out of them, then maybe, but maybe not. I don't know if the players are good enough, Graham. I actually haven't got a clue. Neville seemed to be saying he was genuinely confused about so many of these players. Are they good enough, are they not?
That tied in with what we were saying about Anthony Martial last week, isn't it? Neville was saying then he can't make his mind up. It's literally a 50-50 split. But what we would say and what we can say quite clearly is that 2 years ago, Anthony Martial would have easily got into Manchester United or Manchester City side, or certainly would have been wanted by their squad. I think Marcus Rashford would be another player that they would want. Alexis Sanchez was another player that they wanted. Fred was another player that they wanted. Yet all these players that United have signed instead of City are substandard for United. Mm. That's the fact of the matter. So we can go through United squad and we can say 2 years ago, or even maybe in the last year, several of that United squad would have been part of that Man City squad going forward. Yet now they don't look anywhere near it. Is that down to the coaching? Is that down to the mentality? Is it a lack of confidence? There's a number of things you could say, but I think Guardiola would have taken a number of those players, and he simply has. He's been in for those players that's in United squad. Yet at United, they don't look anything. They don't look even like, well, I won't necessarily say they look poor players. Sanchez has looked a poor player at times. But I think in general, they look to me like there's no sort of, you said it before, maybe plan. There's no plan to how they're going to get themselves into the game from an attacking sense. That's the way that I look at it.
Yeah, and I mean, it probably is a bit of confidence, as you mentioned as well. But I mean, Mourinho has never helped their confidence, you suspect, publicly anyway. And
yeah,
there's an anxiety about the team at times when you look at them play. And it's so slow. I mean, the thing that jumped out at Old Trafford against Juventus was the way Juventus moved the ball around at Old Trafford. And by comparison, this kind of stodgy Manchester United passing, it was just so laboured. And I mean, you really have to think Mourinho is not getting the best out of the players. There was a report in the Observer yesterday talking about how Spurs were in for Martial over the summer, and Mourinho green-lighted the sale to Spurs. He was like, and somebody at the club said, actually, he's actually good, you know. I mean, he's worth keeping around. He's really, really good. And so he's sort of blossomed, but not really because of Mourinho. It's just sort of happened, you know. It's not like Mourinho believed in this guy.
I'm with you there as well. I don't necessarily see it as Mourinho fixing the problem with Anthony Martial. I think even at times when you see him, he looks disinterested. He hasn't necessarily played particularly well in games, but you can see in spells he's devastating. He's so good when he's coming in off the left-hand side. Great control or tight control when he's going past players. I don't necessarily see Martial being able to blossom under the type of manager that Mourinho is. We've had Pat on the last few weeks as well, when Pat was talking about Juan Mata, when he spoke about Jose Mourinho going back into the club and saying, mate, you want to get on your bike now, you want to get on the road. That is the thing that Mourinho brings to players. He does. He's great tactically at organising a side to stop sides scoring against you. That's why he's had the results with Inter Milan over the years, with Porto, with Chelsea. He had a fantastic attacking talent as it was.
Yeah.
But I think over the years, even with United, when they won the Europa League of the year, it wasn't great football watching United get to the final that year. And against Ajax in the final, it was men against boys. United just were physically too strong for Ajax in winning that Europa League. But it's hardly playing against the best, the real cream of European football. Against Juve the other night, I'd say United's budget is probably way more than Juventus' budget. Yes, they've got the superstar in Ronaldo, but I think United's budget is way more than Juve. Yet the only thing that Mourinho can come out with is saying, well, they sign world-class players, we don't. It's total nonsense. I just don't understand his arguments when he's coming out post-match after all these games.
Mm. Stephen Reid was doing the game for us yesterday, and afterwards he was very critical of Mourinho and where it's going. And you know, I think he just shares this sense that a lot of Manchester United fans have now, which is, look, this isn't going to work out under Mourinho. Like, medium-term, long-term, short-term, they're not actually going to reach the summit. And so this is almost just time wasted, and it's toxic. And you know, we were, even myself and Dave were saying, like, if Sterling had went to United under Mourinho and Martial had gone to Manchester City under Guardiola, where would they both be in their careers? And it was almost a rhetorical question. It's so obvious. Martial would be one of the best players in the league, and Sterling would have been sold 18 months ago.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think clearly, even when you saw Raheem Sterling playing for Liverpool, he needed coaching. He needed someone that was going to work with him on the training ground constantly. We have seen those clips. We spoke about those clips with Guardiola coaching Raheem Sterling over the last while. And clearly it works. Even for the third goal at the weekend with Sterling, Joe, his movement off the ball now, he knows, it's instinctive with him now. As soon as a Silva, or as soon as even Gundogan that came on that did get that third goal, as soon as they pick up the ball, he immediately runs forward and runs beyond defenders. He picks up the ball then. He has then broke a line of United's defence. United's defence are out of shape, going back towards their own goal. He lays it back, the cross comes in, and it's goal. That's where it comes from. Yes, you can question Matic not being able to pick up the run of Gundogan, and I would question because it was poor marking from Matic. But overall, you look at the build-up play and look how that goal came about. It's the movement off the ball, and that's what's key to Guardiola's sides. It's constant running in behind, running off defenders, and it's something I've not seen from United. I think United, you said it before, Joe, I think it's quite lethargic, quite turgid watching them play, slow. And it was against Bournemouth last week where it was almost needs must again. Let's get bodies forward. Let's create opportunities for ourselves. And that's where it looked attacking football again. And that's where it's actually decent to watch when you're seeing United.
Yeah.
But I'm certainly not seeing it against any of the better sides.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually something we spoke about in the news round earlier, Kev. We were trying to figure out, can you name a player in Mourinho's time at Manchester United that's really improved? You know, you can say that player has really progressed, even in the defensive area where this is his strength, where maybe he can bring more out of players. But even then, you look at some of the characters that have been around that don't seem to have advanced that much during his time.
Yeah, it's a good shout. It's a great shout. You can look at maybe Luke Shaw improving this season. I think that's probably down to him. I think he's lost weight. I think he's probably looked after himself and he's got himself into the side. Lindelof looks a better player this season than he did last. I think he still gets caught out. I think positionally, I think he goes searching for his man, gets caught out without the ball. Fellaini, maybe the public opinion or the United fans' opinion has changed him to an extent that he's maybe a player that's accepted could come on and make an impact. But no, I don't see anyone that's... Look at Marcus Rashford when he first came into that United side, the talent that he's got. Look where he is now. Martial, as you say, is another one. Lukaku scoring goals last season, but there's a clear problem with Lukaku and Mourinho now, whether that's with his agent or not, I don't know. But there are a number of issues at United, but clearly it's up front. Those attacking players are not happy. They're not happy with what they may be, what they're doing day to day, and they're clearly not happy with when they get onto the to a pitch on a Saturday, Tuesday, whenever it's going to be. They're not happy when they come on.
Ooh, are you gone? Kev, don't go. Kev.
Static, the old static. Radio listeners not seeing the old screen popped up there like the BBC Two late at night when it was gone.
Just the different colours in columns. Yeah. Like if you're ever sick and you'd have to go downstairs and your dad would get you some Calpol and you put on the TV and there's nothing on TV.
Yeah, it's just that.
That's like, how old we are.
That small child feeding a doll or something. That was the centre of the piece.
I was going to put a quote to him there because I actually did. I honestly did. We can get a back row for just a sec. I did want to talk to him a bit more about City because even at the start of the show, someone was like, you should talk about City.
It's probably because we're taking their brilliance for granted, though.
Totally.
It's not a surprise. It's not like a surprising. I mean, we're beyond the stage where people, like on a Monday or whatever, chat and go, did you see City were brilliant over the weekend? Like, you know, it's sort of assumed.
Yes,
you know?
Totally.
It's the kind of thing that you will regret not enjoying it more in years to come.
It's probably very true. And actually, the only way we've really talked about City in the last couple of weeks has been the financial fair play situation.
Which isn't very pleasant as well. And I think makes it harder to, you love watching good football, but, you know, what the club stands for, you'd feel a bit uneasy about it. It's a bit of a tainted aspect to it.
Absolutely, yeah. Mendy did a big sit-down interview with Oliver Holt yesterday, and it was a fairly kind piece. And at one stage, Kev's back with us
my
there.
iPad.
You got us there?
Yeah, my battery went on my iPad there. Sorry about that.
No, you're fine, you're fine. I'll just finish what I was saying to Dan. So Mendy was in a big interview with Oliver Holt, and it was like all the funny stuff. And, you know, he had four speeding fines in 13 days and he was complaining about how you park your car anywhere, you get a ticket in England. But he was talking about being the fun person in the dressing room. And at one point, the only kind of real hard-hitting moment was, and what about the Der Spiegel revelations? He's like, yeah, I didn't read them. I don't care about the rules of UEFA. I just want to eat good, sleep good and play good.
Well, it was an honest answer.
Totally honest, yeah, yeah.
Honest answer, but...
Kev, I was just saying we sort of neglected City, you know, in some respects.
Yeah.
Because... Fernandinho, who got a big piece done in the Match of the Day, how good he was just talking about how Guardiola first arrived and it was very difficult for them to get up to speed with him, and he had to explain things a lot and repeat things a lot, and then they slowly get to learn. And he said now it's at this beautiful point where they're on the pitch and they look over and it's just a quick wave of a Guardiola hand. It's just one gesture and they know exactly what he means. They're like, oh yeah, no, I know I'm going to do that. And it's like telepathic. You know, there was a famous gif of Xavi and Iniesta once. They turned to each other at the same time in the pitch to say something. And they both turned at the same time, looked at each other and sort of nodded and said, yeah. And Guardiola's at that place now at City. Can they win the Champions League this year? Will they win the Champions League this year?
Well, they're favourites, aren't they? They were favourites last year, certainly at the turn of the year as well, because of the football that were playing, rightly so. Liverpool did a job on them, did a number on them last season there. They're the best team in the Champions League, without a doubt, this year. Juve look strong. They look difficult to play against. You'd be putting them in there. But from what I've seen of Barcelona, certainly what I've seen of Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, they're above them. Liverpool proved that they're going to have these off days like they had last week against Red Star Belgrade. So, yeah, I mean, maybe PSG, I think, if they're seriously going to click going forward. But Liverpool have proved that they can take them. Yeah, they're favourites for a reason. And I think, yes, if you're asking the question, who do I think right now is going to the Champions League? I would say City. I think Man City will win it. I think they're going to win the Champions League and the Premier League this year.
It would cement their greatness, that's for sure. Listen, sorry, we dragged you back for not very much. We've to let you go. We've Seamus Coleman speaking to Nathan Murphy yesterday.
That's more important.
Hey, listen, nothing is more important than you to me. You know that.
Yeah, I heard you saying that to Kenny last week, Joe, so don't give me that.
he says it to all the rugby pundits too, Kev.
It's more rugby. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. Of course it is.
Listen,
and all that, you know.
The boys.
Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you as ever. And enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
I will do. Cheers, lads.
Thanks a million.
Some of the boys are really obsessed with me. And some of them, they will wake up in the morning as always, the first thing they think that comes to their mind is Jose Mourinho.
I'm European champion, so I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one. And I'm sorry, I'm a bit arrogant. We have a top manager.
Until the moment they have a manager that wins four Premier Leagues for them, I'm the number one. Because when I left the club last season, I left the club in the Champions League, winning the Champions League group, qualifying to the Champions League knockout phase, playing the second leg at home with the advantage to be the champion of the group. So if they win the Champions League last year, they could be playing in Europe this season. So it's not my fault, it's the fault that the ones that stay here and didn't win the Champions League.
3-0. Do you know what this means? 3-0. But also means 3 premierships, and I won more premierships alone than the other 19 managers together. 3 for me and 2 for them. Respect, 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 man.
Welcome back. Good stuff from Kevin Caban there on the Derby. So before we go, also on yesterday was Chelsea 0, Everton 0. Tetchy enough game. So Seamus Coleman scored in the last game. He didn't have a great day against Manchester United, but scored in the last game, did the whole cupping of the year's thingy, and then continued some decent form into yesterday. He's obviously getting back and feeling good about his body again, as he was saying a couple of weeks ago. So as is becoming a routine now, Nathan Murphy follows him everywhere. So it seems Seamus Coleman comes out and sees Nathan waiting. And
stalking.
In fairness to Coleman, takes pity and says, OK, I'm the Irish captain. The position is bigger than me. He's an Irish man over there. Takes pity.
I mean, I talked to him last week.
Yeah. I mean, oh, you're here again. It's great to see you. Nathan? No, but so he always stops, in fairness to Coleman. He's great. So Nathan Murphy, he was on commentary yesterday and then went to speak to Coleman afterwards. So here's some of Seamus Coleman.
You've spoken very highly of the influence of the new players this season, not just on the pitch, but probably maybe, is it a change of attitude in the dressing room that there's a bit more ambition among some of the guys who've arrived in?
Yeah, I think so, and that's not comparing to people of the past teams, but I just feel like the lads that have come in have all been really good characters, which I think if you want to be successful, especially at a place like us, you need good people, and when things aren't going so well, you dig in together, and we've definitely got that on the pitch. And as I said, the vibe around the training ground and the vibe the manager gives us is always confidence and play with a smile on your face, and you can see that.
It's been an interesting few weeks with the celebration last week. You're obviously annoyed with some of the comments around the Ireland team as well. The captaincy, is that something that you're really cherishing, that you very much feel maybe it's turning 30, maybe it's something in you that you're deciding that actually I'm not going to be the quiet guy in the dressing room anymore, I'm going to say what I feel I need to say?
Yeah, I don't think I was ever the quiet guy in the dressing room anyway. If you speak to people, they'll tell you that. But I hadn't played well probably when I came back from a foot injury the couple of games. You know, I gave away the penalty against Palace and didn't have a great night against United. But, you know, the last two games I felt much, much fitter, much stronger. And as I said, a lot kind of was made of that celebration. But if you do your homework and go back on plenty of the goals I've scored, they've all had, you know, Swansea away, I'll start putting advertising boards, Arsenal. There's been celebrations, and that's, I just lose a run of myself a little bit and, you know, let the emotion out. Vice versa with the fans, I let their emotion out at times, and as I said, there's no big story to it.
Yeah, you're heading back now to Dublin, international duty, a huge week with the friendly with Northern Ireland, then the trip to Denmark to round off the Nations League. You obviously missed the last two games. When you go in now, what's the message to the players as to what you're looking to achieve over the next week?
Yeah, you want to, you know, first and foremost put on a performance, but as soon as we meet up, full focus is on the two games. We want two good performances, two positive results going into what's going to be massive games in March, because we haven't been at our best, and you know, I'll be the first to tell you that. Unfortunately, we've had, you know, I've played a few games here and there, missed a few. We've not really had, a strong 11 in consecutive games as such. So it's about us now going there and putting on a performance for ourselves, for the manager, and for the supporters as well.
It's just about calming everything down, even to head into this break ahead of the March fixtures, where it's not controversy and speculation and talk about managers' futures.
No, look, we can't. That's football nowadays. You know, your job as media is to speculate and talk about managers, talk about players, form, no form. form. But as a group, we're very tight knit. We're together at all times. I think from when the manager came in, we've had some big nights, some great occasions, and we're looking forward to, you know, giving the fans, you know, nights to be proud of again. And I genuinely, you know, believe that that's possible.
In a lot of ways, you're living the dream. You're the Ireland captain. But I guess when you're thinking about the dream of being Ireland captain, it's with good nights, it's with big nights. It's not when it's tough.
No, it's not. But part and parcel of football, you take the good and the bad. And my career has not been like that. It's been like that, and that's football. And at the minute, with the Ireland team, we're not where we want to be. But I fully believe that we're capable of having some big results. And I'll always say it comes down to players as well. We have to go away and we have to get on the ball. Never once have I been told, you know, kick it into a channel. Players have to be brave when we go away and play with our national team. And bravery is not just tackling, it's getting on the ball, making things happen, and taking responsibility on the pitch. And then whatever happens, you know, you take it on the chin. If you've given the ball away or whatever, you've got to take that on the chin. We're professional footballers who get paid a lot of money to do what we do, and playing for our country is something we should be very proud of. So as players, we've got to take that in the chin as well.
My best of luck this week.
There we are, Seamus Coleman with Nathan Murphy at Stamford Bridge yesterday after Everton's nil-all draw against Chelsea. Talking the good talk, Dan. He's talking the good talk.
He is, yeah. Speaking about, I think he probably has adapted to that ambassadorial role slightly bit over the last period of time. You know, that he's not afraid to speak his mind. I think I speak in the perspective of, you know, you watch players coming down a corridor, down a tunnel, and like, who's going to speak today? You see James McLean, if he stops, well, he's going to say something good. Yeah. But Coleman, you know, it's always going to be more so safe and diplomatic. But I think he's sort of found his voice a bit more in the last while as well, too. And
I'll just ask Keith Andrews.
He's not, well, exactly. I think it's safe to say he lashed Keith Andrews in paper talk speak that I know you love so much. But he actually did. I mean, he called him out. He definitely had a go at Keith Andrews. So
did what he said about Keith Andrews sound to you like exactly the type of put down Martin O'Neill might have?
I see what you're saying.
Just
yeah.
In terms of style, in terms of delivery, in just terms of and by the way, actually, you know, if we're
from the same genre,
if we're talking about so and so, and then boom, knifing, and then reversing back out nicely. I just thought, I don't know. I have no insider info there.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I think they get on well with Coleman. I think they like Coleman. He's their type of no nonsense. Doesn't like the new school, over pampered washbag generation of players, and I think I'd imagine he probably finds he has a lot in common with Martin O'Neill, Roy Keane, maybe in terms of their views of people. I don't know, that could be a reach, but I think it's probably not a massive leap. And I suppose there's some interesting lines in there just about the issue of bravery and saying that the Irish players can't just, or you know, the Irish nation as such, you know, shouldn't just be blaming the manager for everything, that they should look to the players too to show a bit of bravery when they get on the ball.
Yeah, well, I always think of the tone he set in 2016 against France. You know, if you watch the first 30 seconds of that game back again, tip-off ball went back to Coleman. He was under big pressure. He was being pressed and was totally within his rights to clip a ball long. And instead, he cut inside his man, went to McCarthy, went out to left-hand side, down the left-hand side, cross-in, penalty. But it started with Coleman.
It set things off.
A tone, you know, setting a tone, so he does walk the walk as well, in fairness to him. It's good to see him getting back in good form. I mean, we need Seamus Coleman for at least the next 4 years, next two cycles, for sure. So that was him speaking at Stamford Bridge yesterday. Before we go, the Great White Hope.
Well, we always need a Great White Hope. This is a guy, Daniel Crowley.
Let me rephrase that. Who's your latest Great White Hope?
Who's your latest one?
Who's your latest next Zinedine Zidane?
Well, he was the Great White Hope who was wearing the white of England for a while. Now, Danny Crowley's name, or Dan Crowley's name, will be familiar to people. He's one of these people that, players that he was a playmaker at Arsenal. He was as a kid, and all these videos went around of him scoring these amazing goals. Like, he's a number 10, basically. You know, great trickster skills, you know, all the stuff that excites you in a player.
Age.
And he's now 21. Okay. And but a couple of years back, he was also in the Grealish era of eligibility sagas. We've now moved on to the various phases. We're under Rice and Obafemi years now. But Crowley was another one. And he played for both Ireland and England. And he met Martin O'Neill in 2015. I'm not sure how well that meeting went. Mm-hmm. I think O'Neill thought he was very confident. And you can sort of make it that what you will. But he has now gone
to Holland. He's left Arsenal and he's been in Holland for the last 18 months with Willem II, or Willem II, more Willem II, I'd say, in the Eredivisie.
This is sounding eerily similar to Jack Byrne, all of these.
Yeah, I think Martin O'Neill referenced, he reminded him of Jack Byrne in some ways, but he's spoken to Sam Wallace in The Telegraph.
Yeah.
And has finally, he's confirmed that he wants to play for Ireland. He says, when I've gone away with England, I've never felt like it was me. You were not allowed an opinion for England. If you do, you were seen to have a bad attitude. I mean, he's Coventry born, but his Irish grandfather moved to the East Midlands from Waterford, and he spent his childhood summers in Ireland. He's got a family of Celtic fans, apparently. Okay. But he is a confident lad, and these quotes here, he's interested in speaking about how he's rowed with coaches and he's had issues, personality clashes that have held him back. But I've always known how good I was, he said. Imagine not fulfilling your potential and living the rest of your life with that. I just couldn't do it. If I wasn't as good as I think I am, I think I would have given up. Just because of living away and all the shite I've been through and the constant battles with coaches, why should I stop because of other people? I would only be letting myself down. I think I could be one of the best number 10s in the world. So, strong quotes.
Well, technically gifted number 10s playing in a top division anywhere in Europe are high enough on my agenda.
And he is saying I can be one of the best in the world.
Yeah, well,
now, I know Jack Byrne is a confident lad too, and it hasn't worked out for him.
In that position of all positions, you need to have an ego.
Confidence. Yeah, and he's got time on his side too. And you think of Wes and Wes, here we go again. But I mean, how long did it take him to get there? Yeah. You know, so he is only 21. So let's not sort of write any definitive conclusion about it, or even Jack Byrne as well, who's not that old either.
So earlier on we asked you to identify our mystery voice. It was, of course, Warren Gatland. Congratulations to Michael Trainer. So you win an Ireland limited edition series jersey, and you're in the end of week draw as well to win tickets to the New Zealand game, all with thanks to Volkswagen, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Tomorrow morning, don't forget OTBAM live on all our social channels, and they have Davey Fitz in studio with Owen and Jer from 7:45 a.m. tomorrow. All your social channels, OTBAM, every weekday morning, 7:45. So Davey Fitz in studio tomorrow. And then, of course, tomorrow night we have our roadshow at the Olympia. Paul O'Connell, Justin Marshall, Brian O'Driscoll, all guests of honour, Keith Wood as well. We are going to play you some of the best bits of that on Wednesday and Thursday. So it's an off-air event as such. So tomorrow night on the radio, Dan, we have Keith Andrews and Johnny Ward holding the fort.
Whoa, what
fireworks.
What a team.
What a team. No prisoners taken. Tom Dunn's on the way next, Dan. Thank you.
Give him a ball and a yard of grass. He'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give him a ball and a yard of spice.